Thank you for joining us. This is the Fisheries Podcast, a podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fishery science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. If you enjoy the show and would like to become a sponsor, please head over to patreon.com and search for Fisheries Podcast. For as little as $1 a month, you can help out and receive a Fisheries Podcast sticker in the mail. We are very grateful for our three patrons so far and hope that you consider joining them. If you would like to be a guest, please get in touch. Finally, we really enjoyed hearing from you during our Voices of Quarantine episode and would love to make your stories a recurring part of the show. If you have a story to tell or particularly a major win or fail, please send an email of a voice memo to feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. We'd love to put you on. This week on the podcast, the four hosts sat down to chat about various aspects of the job search. Three of the four are currently in some form of job transition, and we chat about what it's like to be on the job market right now. So I had the idea for this episode after doing interviews for a seasonal position back in March and talking with all the applicants. They were all curious about my career path and how I got to where I was now. So I thought we could all share our experiences and tips in case listeners could benefit from our advice or past troubles or successes. And all of us have been in the position of searching for jobs at some point, and half of us are currently in that position. Julie, why don't you explain your situation a little bit?
Thanks, Nick. If you've listened to a few episodes of the show, you probably know that I just finished my PhD. I officially graduated just a few weeks ago from the University of South Florida. However, unlike many PhD students, I did not move to town for the degree. I had lived in town for close to 10 years before I started that degree. So we've lived in the city for about 15 years. My husband has a great job that he really likes. And so I guess I am looking for the next job amongst a global pandemic in the town that I currently live in. And so basically keeping my options open in terms of the type of work that I'm looking for.
It certainly seems like a good reason to want to stay in town, which also makes the job searching more difficult. Brett, you're about to defend or finish up your thesis work in the middle of the pandemic as well. And I bet this scenario isn't something you ever imagined when you first rolled into Ames. How's that going?
Yeah, you are correct. I definitely did not imagine defending right beside my refrigerator and the kitchen whenever I thought about, you know, summing up all the work that I've been able to accomplish over the last 2.5 years, but it's going all right. I'd say that most of the thesis is pretty much written and being edited as the days go, but we haven't seen many students in the department virtually defend yet. I'd say I've watched a few and say there's definitely some challenges associated with it, but I think one of the things for me that's difficult is not being able to see friends and family that might be able to show up and sort of share the experience with me. But I have started looking into what's next and applying to a few things here and there.
Both of you, and this is Sue speaking now, both of you are currently looking for jobs. And what kind of jobs are you both looking for?
I've done a wide variety of different things in my time here in St. Petersburg. So I have several different types of experiences that I can draw on. And so I'm trying to get creative and draw on as many of those different types of experiences as I can. I've worked for an agency, I've taught high school, and I've been in academia. So I feel like I have a pretty broad base and I like aspects of each one. So I'm really just trying to keep my options open.
That's great. Brett, what's your approach?
Yeah, like Julie, I'm trying to keep a pretty open mind, although I'd consider myself first and foremost a streams guy, or at least a river and streams guy. And so most of the jobs that I'm looking for, I'm hoping that most of the job responsibilities are oriented towards flowing waters and native fish species. Because that's truly what I'm passionate about, which does narrow down a few different things. But for the most part, I'm not really limited geographically. I really grew up and stayed in a pretty small circumference from where I grew up for the first 20 years of my life. And so I definitely want to see different parts of the country and different river systems and species. So trying to keep an open mind and being able to move, although moving right now seems kind of nightmarish.
I love what you both are saying, because I think that the key to success is expanding what you're able to do or where you're able to go or both. And so it's just great to hear that both of you are doing at least one of those things across time that'll expand your opportunities even more. So what is the job market like right now? Are you both finding opportunities? Are agencies posting jobs?
I've found some. I have applied for probably at least 25 different jobs. I've had 3 or 4 interviews. I have one actually coming up next week, and it is going to be virtual. I haven't actually done a fully virtual video interview yet, so that should be interesting. It is with a group of people that I know relatively well already, so I think I might have a leg up in that department.
Yeah, I'd say for me, I'm still a little reluctant to spend too much time on the job search, just because I know the task at hand is quite a daunting and pretty important one. But I'm finding a couple positions, especially some that are kind of ideal for what I would want. Although that being said, I think a lot of other people are seeing positions as well. And so I haven't gone through any formal interviews at this point, but I know some coworkers have gone through that virtual interview process and said it wasn't too different. I know whenever I actually applied to a couple of different graduate programs, 2 out of the 3 were over Zoom. And then the last one that I actually got, and I'm still here, was just a phone call, actually. So I'm hoping that I have some things to draw off of for when that time does come. But just trying to stay optimistic and ultimately just finish the thesis before I have that fear of missing out and start spending multiple days writing cover letters.
Yeah, it's definitely time intensive. Do you both set aside time in your week, or how do you fit in the time to apply?
I do. So having a small child and a partner who's working full time and everyone being at home, I have primary childcare responsibility at this point. And so during the day, I work just a few hours a day. But when there's a job that I really am interested in, that's my work for that day.
That's great. When I was really extensively searching, I usually set aside like late Sunday afternoon.
So when I was sort of working on finishing up my dissertation, definitely worked on my dissertation during the week. And then on the weekend, that's when I was, you know, did the job.
Do you have any current tips or advice for others in a similar situation? Have you picked up some tips, either of you?
Just keeping your options open, looking at all the different types of things that you could bring to a job, and being very creative about what types of skills you have and where you could apply them, whether it's across different types of work within the field of fisheries, or even, you know, leaving the field, even though it's something that we all really love, and doing related type work and just applying the skills that you've learned to some, whatever's going to help you.
Yeah. Building off what Julie said, I mean, I don't have as much sage advice as you three probably will, but for early career professionals and potentially graduating undergraduates, definitely what I see a lot of times is that people are very geographically limited to trying to find highly coveted fisheries positions, which are already pretty competitive because relatively it's a pretty small field, in my opinion. But also trying to do that while maybe going back home to live with their parents for a while, which obviously it can be done. People do it. But I definitely think that one, just expanding a little bit where you're able to be a little bit flexible and being able to travel. Plus, I think it helps give different experiences on different parts of the country. And then two, what I would say is that sometimes it seems like people will leave things out of pertinent information, such as like an interview or a resume, because they feel that it doesn't enhance or it wasn't their fishery specific experiences. Whereas, I mean, ultimately we are scientists just like a lot of other fields, and we are tasked to react to situations or think about natural systems. And so just because you might not have a bunch of exactly fisheries related experience, like Julie said, if you know how to critically think about a situation, react to it, or, you know, devise a plan to deal with that, then I think that can still be definitely useful information to include on a resume, or if it were to come up in a scenario based question and interview. Certainly, just because it's not fisheries, don't exclude it from your experiences.
Nick, did you have advice to add?
When I was ending grad school and applying to jobs, I basically just applied anywhere that I thought that I was knowledgeable about the fish populations. I didn't have any experience or too much classwork and salmonid stuff, so I stayed away from that. So I was stuck basically to the interior Midwest and applied anywhere I could. I interviewed in Kentucky, Oklahoma, Missouri, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, and so just all over the place, just hoping I would stick somewhere, and eventually I did. So I guess don't be afraid to move away from home is my advice to those. But it appears that Brett and Julie have no problem doing that.
Yeah, that's great. I would just add that, like you were just mentioning, Nick, you know, volume means everything. And every time you apply, I think it's important to tailor your application. I have friends that when they fill out an application, they just have one general letter. And I've always written a letter that was specific to that position, because I think it's important to show that you will take the time to really show interest in that job and that location. And then I also think that, you know, it's important to be on time with your application. The new department head where I'm at now was just telling me the other day about a lot of applicants apply late and then human resources won't let them into the pool. So it's just really important to remember simple things like getting your application in on time. And then a lot of people just want to work with someone who's really respectful and a good coworker and really appreciative. So it's like, if you do get an interview, just all those good manners and things like that really do go a long way, I feel like. And I feel like we don't often talk about those things with the job search, but it's really important to show a person that other people would really want to work with. Then I don't know how y'all feel about this, but I usually send a thank you letter after I have an interview, just thanking them for taking the time to interview me. And I think that's really important too, to kind of leave them with that kind of, with that tone. And then I always take stock of how I did during the process and just use that to inform how I perform the next time when I do get an interview.
Another piece of advice that came to me: when you do land an interview, I ran into the problem a few times. Fisheries is kind of a small net world, especially when you're applying to positions that you might have worked with some of those people. And so an issue I had in one interview specifically was I knew everyone on the panel. And so when I did the interview with them, I wasn't as descriptive of my experiences and qualifications as I should have been, because I assumed that they already knew all of that. When, I mean, despite, even if you're talking and interviewing with your mother or father, tell them everything you've done, to be very descriptive with your experiences and let them know exactly how hard you've worked in some of your positions.
Oh, that's a great point. Don't ever assume that they read your CV, because a lot of people haven't. In my whole entire job search, I've come across very few instances where the person specifically pointed out something from my CV. So that's a great point, Nick. reiterate what you can do. And to follow that up, and maybe you all feel this, but most of us, when we talk about the job process amongst our friends, we lament about all the different things that maybe we don't feel very strongly in. And it's important to really represent yourself well and really show your strengths. And then if there are things that you want to improve in or grow in that area, tell them how that job is of interest to you so that you can grow in that area. And because I feel like sometimes people start an interview by saying what their weaknesses are, or where they feel they're weak, and that's probably not the best approach.
Yeah, that's actually something I've been trying to think about, how to leverage inexperience and say, you know, I wouldn't, you know, be in graduate school if I wasn't, but I really do actually enjoy learning different things. But I'd say one thing that worries me sometimes is that, like, weightable systems. And so I don't have endless hours of experience with boating or, you know, sampling of fishes from moving vessels on water, which obviously is a huge, what many, potentially all three of you all do or have done in the past, and what a lot of the jobs out there are. And so I've been trying to think about, like, well, you know, I have that much experience with it, but I don't think that that necessarily takes away from the fact that I would like to, and I personally think that I would be very capable of doing it in the future. So I've been trying to think about how to leverage inexperience in a way that doesn't make you sound like a weak candidate, but an eager one. And so I think that can be helpful for early career professionals as well, that, you know, just haven't had the years of life to potentially land positions, especially with the competition. And then actually I wanted to dig in a little bit to the cover letter, because I've heard this advice a lot. And Sue, you said to always tailor your cover letter to the position. And I definitely do that. But I guess I was curious a little bit, what is the status of the cover letter in 2020? Is it more about, in your opinion, and anyone can weigh in on this, is it more about speaking to things that you have done, almost like an elaboration in text of bullet points on your CV or your resume? Or is it more about how you think that you'll fit with the agency or department or whoever is listing the job? Because I think there's sometimes where I feel like I'm just saying in longer pieces of text things that I've said on my CV. And so I'm kind of curious how you all sit down to write a cover letter, because I've heard that piece of advice, tailor your cover letter, but less often do I hear about the structure within. So I didn't know if you guys had something to say about that.
First of all, I think that it depends very heavily on how many different pieces the particular job that you're applying to is asking for. So in a lot of cases with an agency, right, you are going with a CV or a resume and a cover letter, right? Those are your two pieces. If it says resume, don't give them a 10-page CV. Give them a resume, because they're different documents. In that instance where they're looking for a resume and a cover letter, the way that I approach it, and I have been on the job market for 6 months and not gotten a job, so take this with a grain of salt, is kind of do both of what you describe, to be honest. I kind of have a few different cover letters that kind of speak to different types of jobs. I have places in the beginning and end where I specify exactly the job that I'm applying to at that moment. And much of the text deals with highlighting particular areas from my resume where I feel like it would be appropriate for that type of job. So if it's like a data job, I'm going to highlight some of the data things that I've done. If it's an outreach job, I'm going to highlight some of the outreach things that I've done. And then leave some space, at least for a few sentences, for you to demonstrate that you understand what kind of job it is and what kind of person they're looking for.
Yeah, just to add to what Julie's saying, so I first of all state that I can do that position. That's the first thing that I say. And then I say I'm excited to do it. You know, usually I say, like, this is an exciting position and I'm really interested in it. And then I list kind of my qualifications for it briefly. And then I often talk about, you know, so if they want you to teach something, I say what I can teach and that I can teach that. If they want research, I say what research I'm doing. And then usually I talk about what I'm really excited about. So, like, this is kind of what I'm up to right now. And then I usually look back at it and look and see if that letter expresses who I am. And I do that more now that I've written many of them. Because you want to give a feeling, an impression of yourself through your writing. You want it to be articulate. You want it to be really well written. And you want it to express your personality so that they can walk away with it from knowing, like, okay, this person can do this. This person is excited to do this. This is who they kind of are and what they're interested in. And you almost want them to walk away from that letter thinking, and I like them. I like their tone. So I would do exactly what you were describing, and then I would try to put a little bit of yourself in there in some way, Brett.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't know. I mean, Sue, you probably have a much better mm-hmm. handle on this. I feel like the cover letter in a faculty situation might be a very different beast, because in the situation of, like, applying to a faculty job, there are so many other documents that you need to assemble and have, you know, writing pieces, you know, your teaching plan and your research plan and your, I don't know, whatever, you know, inclusion plan and all these different things. And I almost feel like the cover letter is just sort of a way of, like, saying, I've got this all here together and, you know, look at all my other pieces.
Yeah, it really varies, doesn't it? Like, some schools ask for up to, you know, 6 different documents, and other schools, it's the schedule. Nick, do you have a cover letter during your, you were talking about interviewing earlier this spring. Did those folks submit a cover letter?
Yeah. I mean, my seasonal interviews, I keep it pretty lax, but most of them would, I'd ask for a cover letter. Most of them would just be the email that they sent everything. It wasn't a separate Word document or anything. It was just describing their service and why they're interested in the position and why they thought they'd be good, and to view their resume. And these were all undergraduate students for the most part applying for these positions. Hmm. So,
would you say I hear this all the time, and I have had some, not back and forth, but some mixed reviews. Do you guys live and die by the cover letters should always be one page?
No.
me either.
I think it really depends heavily on what other types of documentation and other types of things the person is asking for, or the, you know, if it specifies one page, then absolutely. But, you know, I've had a number of jobs that's your main document to introduce yourself. And I've had ones that specify 2 pages. And so a lot of my recent ones have been closer to 2 pages, because if that's the main thing that I'm introducing myself with and my, you know, background and abilities, then I maybe have a little bit more space.
Yeah, I'd say when you can keep it brief, do so, just because the nice thing about one page is they look down at that page and there's your name right at the bottom. And that's what you want them to remember, right? Is your name. So you don't necessarily want it to be at the bottom of the second page. So, like Julie said, if that's the only document you can submit, then have it, you know, really express who you are. But if it can be brief, then have it be brief and have your name be right there when they look down at that application packet. Because you want them to remember that. And you want it, they have to slog through so many of these. It's so time consuming. And so you want to try to keep things easy for them, right? Make yourself an easy candidate to see what you're all about and make it easy for them to understand what you have to offer, I think. Yeah, and one thing we haven't really talked about that much, and Nick, you might have some more input on this, but I feel like after a while, as you're going through the process, you will find where you're getting the most hits, and then you can even target your job search to those positions that other people are seeking you out for. It's like for me, over time, I've gotten a lot more hits on fisheries applications for faculty positions than, say, general biology. And I used to apply to them relatively equally. And then I saw that, like, wow, this is where I'm attractive to folks. And then so you all in your process might see after a while, like, okay, this is where I'm really getting hits. So this is where I'm going to really focus my time. And if it matches your interests, all the better.
So you did just take a new position. Yeah. Congratulations. That's awesome. Do you want to describe to us your new job?
Yep. So I'm currently starting this fall as an assistant professor of fisheries science at Arkansas Tech University. And yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Awesome. What kinds of things are you looking forward to in your new role?
Well, in this position, I can expand my research portfolio and take on graduate students and just have colleagues with an expanded similar interests to mine own. And Arkansas Tech has just a whole stable full of boats, backpack shockers, new funding courses. And so it's really endless. And, you know, not to mention like really high biodiversity of fishes and Ozark streams. And so I could go on for a while, but I'm really excited about a lot of different things.
Brett, I see your PhD program calling.
Yeah. I mean, Maine is awesome. There's like 61 species of fish or something, and I love them all, and they're all really great. But, you know, Arkansas has like 200, so.
So I have no experience applying or interviewing for professorships. We mentioned I've applied everywhere else, but I imagine Julie or some other people in our audience would be interested in hearing more about the process of applying it to university professorship positions. So how is that different than applying for a full-time job with an agency?
It isn't like you don't get your application into USA Jobs and then you can just kind of, like, once you're in the system, it's not like that. So each application is kind of like a new gargantuan effort, or at least it has been in my experience. So Julie, would you say that's a little bit different?
Yeah. Oh my God. It's infinitely easier to apply to NOAA or to apply for a state agency or a nonprofit or literally any place except for a professorship.
It is difficult. And sometimes they want your letters of recommendation sent to the school before an interview. So then it's time for, it takes time up for all those people that are writing letters for you too, which is that has held me back from applying for positions sometimes. Right, along with your teaching statement, research statement, diversity statement, your CV, cover letter. So, you know, I think usually it's like a minimum of 2 hours, even when I have my stuff together. And then depending on their system, it might, you know, it's pretty time, you know, you have to keep your CV really polished, and you also, you need to keep working on any area of your CV that you think is weak. And this might not apply to everybody, but, you know, as I'm going through the season and applying for jobs, I'm mindful of like, okay, well, if I do this, it'll really shore up that part of my CV. And then, so you do that and you put that on, and it's difficult. I think it's such a difficult process. There's a lot of people who won't even talk about it. Some people can be really private about it. But I've heard from different people that if you get even 25% callbacks, that's really high. I had a pretty good year this year, but that was after I already had a professorship. So then I think I was a little bit more marketable because I had a lot more teaching experience.
It definitely seems like finding the next professorship job is much easier than finding the first one.
Yeah, I don't know. And like everybody has like a different journey. And there's so many awesome folks I've known that have kind of like detoured from that path. There wasn't a research assistantship available when I got my PhD. I graduated. I had my second daughter within a week. And within 2 months, we moved to Canada so I could be a visiting assistant professor. And so, you know, everybody has their own journey, right? So I just went straight into teaching. And then you just kind of have to, whatever journey you have to try to make that into being a successful one for you and your family. But I really think overall, Nick, that it just takes like constant, unending effort. But there's a lot of people that would say, listen, I tried so hard and it just didn't happen for me. And so I think it varies by field too. And maybe Julie, maybe you've heard some of your friends talk about applied for 75 200 jobs and only ever got one interview. Or, you know, be versatile. I mean, I'm also a certified fisheries professional. And I was more so targeted by positions that liked that my ability to be a fisheries professional, to teach students those skills. That was what was more marketable for me, was that. So I think that you can kind of walk both lines a little bit, and that a lot of schools, depending on where you're applying, might appreciate you being able to do, to teach folks that are going to go into agencies.
Yeah, for sure. Is this your first time that you'll be taking on graduate students?
Yep.
Do you have any graduate students lined up?
I'm on the committee for one already. I mean, my contract doesn't even start until August, I think. Right. So, yeah, but I'm excited. And like Brett was just talking about, we'll be doing a lot of stream work. I'm also kind of a stream person, but we'll be doing other stuff as well. So Nick, who did you end up hiring? Like, don't say their name, but what were the characteristics that you finally selected in the person that you selected?
So I ended up selecting a graduate, someone that just graduated with their master's out of KU, so a half hour away from my office. So a little bit more experience in the field and with fish than some of the other undergraduate applicants. I mean, they're all good applicants, but it's just the little bit of extra.
And Nick, for like undergraduates, I know that a lot of undergraduate folks I know are finding it to be difficult, especially this year, landing their first job. Like, how can someone transition from school to a job? How would you kind of coach someone through that process?
So I guess it's all about just gain as much experience as you can as an undergraduate. I was fortunate growing up in Iowa. Iowa has an extensive internship program that hires, I think the last I heard was like 70 students a summer. Most of them are aquatic nuisance species positions, boat ramp interviews, but I mean, that's a foot in the door. You got those summers in between classes, just do whatever internship you can, no matter if it's a volunteer or a low paying internship, just get your foot in the door and that'll introduce you to people, get your name in front of the agency. And the next time there's a position open, you'll be much more, you'll most likely be viewed more favorably. And you'll also have that experience to fall back on to set you apart from maybe the next wave of students coming through. So just getting as much experience as you can as an undergraduate. Every summer in between classes, I did an internship with the Iowa DNR, and eventually those connections led me to my master's degree and my master's program. And then those same connections, I mean, I knew many of the people that I was interviewing with through my graduate school. So meeting them at meetings and just names in the field that I knew. So
Brett and Julie, do you have anything to offer to folks? Like, what kind of keys to your own successes do you think are important to kind of share?
To be honest, right now, I feel like I'm in a pretty difficult job search situation and a difficult transition. And I never, honestly, never appreciated the transitions that I had prior to this. I mean, I've hopped around between various different sub-disciplines within marine biology and marine science and marine outreach and all these things. In retrospect, very seamlessly. I just did. And, you know, I said, oh, I want to try this for a while. Okay. And then I would just find something and then I would do it for a while. And now I'm being very methodical and I'm trying really hard to figure out what is coming next. And I mean, I'm sure the pandemic definitely isn't making it any easier, but, even before this started, it wasn't easy.
Yeah, I guess for one experience that sort of stands out in my mind is when I was graduating from Clemson, I was talking to a few different professors as I was starting to apply for jobs and graduate positions at the time. And I remember being a little bummed out because I'd applied for a couple of different things that didn't really pan out. I remember the professor that I was working under at the time told me that he applied to 10 to 14 programs before he got into like a master's degree. And so here I was thinking like, well, you're a genius and I've looked up to you for multiple years of my life. And so just some perspective saying, you know, it takes time and you're not going to just land everything that sounds cool to you. But truly, you know, there are other qualified folks out there. But I think really just that ability to say, okay, it's not necessarily a reflection of myself. Oftentimes, if I don't get something, it could be that there truly was, you know, more qualified candidates and potentially there's something else out there that I will like just as much or will be just as unique. So especially for people coming straight out of school, I think that's really important to remember.
I think that's so great. I was reflecting on that same kind of thing recently. I got asked a question in an interview about undergraduate biology, and I said something about how in different parts of the country, different student groups will respond differently to the theory of evolution. And I talked a little bit about how I handled that in the classroom. And they looked at me like I was crazy. Like I was just like, what are you talking about? Who would ever not be like in favor of evolution, you know? And I'm looking at them like, have you not been around the world? Like, you know what I mean? It's not everybody's favorite theory. It's not a big deal. And then I felt so vindicated because in the position that I just recently got, that was one of the questions during my interview. How do you handle this situation? And I just said, wow, thank you so much for asking me that question. And I was ready for it. And I just feel so glad about it because it's like, yeah, see, that's something other people care about, you know? It's so you might be a better fit, you know? Like other people might kind of share your ideas and your realizations about the world. And, you know, sometimes those closed doors, you're better off. And I would say that it's important not to lament about them. And I think we all know people who like will look up and try to figure out who got the job that they wanted. And I would say that do not do that. And just kind of get all of you to reflect on what is, you know, in your experiences, what are some of the best parts of the job search?
The first interview I ever did was for a paddlefish job that I thought I was a home run for. And I thought I rocked the interview and I didn't end up getting it. So it was a real confidence shaker. And then the other ones, after that, I didn't really sell myself too well. And then for some reason, when I interviewed in Kansas, I rocked it. Both times I interviewed in Kansas for two different positions, I felt like I rocked it. And I did a lot better job selling myself in their interview than I did in others. So I really enjoyed that feeling when you just know that you answered the question to the absolute best of your ability and that you were 100% sure that you got the correct answer, the answer that they're looking for. And one specific one was I was interviewing in Oklahoma and they asked for like an idea for a slogan for the Paddlefish Research Center. And for some reason in my head, I told myself, oh, you should probably look up what the Oklahoma, forgot what the Oklahoma department's motto is or slogan. So I had looked that up the night before and I just rattled that off in the interview. And the fish chief just looked at me and was like, I don't even think I could rattle that off the top of my head. So thank you. It was fun hitting those home ground questions like that. But
I love that you're like 100% confident that you got the right answer. So Julie, what are some things that, you know, you've kind of the best parts of the process for you?
I think one thing that's really neat is imagining myself doing something new. Cause one of the things, you know, I said, I've been working for around 20 years now and I've kind of bopped around. I've done outdoor education. I've done high school teaching. I've done research. I've done, you know, academic and agency. And I think one of the cool things about applying to new jobs is just imagining myself doing something different. And a lot of times doing something that I've never actually done before. And that is really, really fun and really exciting. And sometimes it can make it extra disappointing to not get the job or not get the interview, but it does kind of, it is just exciting to imagine myself doing all kinds of new things.
That's so fabulous.
I love Julie's answer. So I'm just going to take hers and if you'll just put my name in front of it. But I 100% agree. I think that something that I get really excited about is just like seeing what other people do, because I talk about this a lot with like fellow graduate students, is that I genuinely like watching like the AFS webinars or other people's defenses that aren't necessarily in fisheries, because I feel like we're really good, especially the graduate students in my department, because we're all in the basement of the same building, at staying within our own bubble. And to me, I just really miss out on all the other stuff that's going on sometimes. And so sometimes when I'm scrolling through a job board, I mean, I know the job market is tough, but it's just really neat to see that there are that many conservation projects that are even happening. And I just think it's really neat to look at different stuff. And 100%, like Julie said, just imagining myself potentially in a new environment, because one, like I said earlier, I didn't travel very much growing up. And then I went to college about an hour from where I grew up. And so I have always been relatively close to home. And so the first trip to Iowa for me was, one, not only my first trip to the Midwest, but it was 1,000 miles from home. And I think it was an amazing experience, because even though there's a lot of the parts that are rural Midwestern states that are remind me of rural Southeastern states, I don't think I would have gotten the same experience had I gone that third time directly close to home again for like a follow-up master's or a job straight out of college. So I'm excited to travel and see new things. And then I am a nerd and I love non-game stream fishes and just all the ins and outs and different species and everything. So I just always think about like, okay, well, what species are they going to be looking at in this job? And that's honestly, that's what I truly look at, is like, all right, well, what kind?
No, Brett, that's my answer.
I'm like, what kind of fish am I going to see? Because I'd love to see, you know, blah, blah, blah darter or something, something shiner. And so,
yeah. Yeah. That's one of the best parts, is like, what species do they have there? Mm. And conservation issues. But I also like meeting new people. I'm sure y'all feel that way. Mm. There was one job that I didn't take this year And it's funny because the one thing I regret about it was I really liked the people on that day in the interview, and it was like sad to say goodbye to them and sad to think, oh, I'll never work with them, and they were so nice.
Right. I have a similar opinion about graduate school, especially for master's programs or friends within other master's programs, because it seems like such a relatively short amount of time that you make lots of cool relationships. And then given that people typically travel in the natural resources realm, it's like awesome that they landed a job somewhere because it's difficult and they completed the journey. But then they're gone. And so it's been tough because you come in to sort of like a cohort, and then in your 2 years there, you could have a complete turnover of coworkers. And so that's pretty difficult, or it has been for me. Now, granted, I really enjoy the people that I work with, but it's definitely a different experience from, say, like the turnover of like an agency job potentially is much different.
Yeah, it's the downside of academia for sure, is the fact that it's so fluid. People are out, it's a very temporal kind of situation.
Definitely for people that are starting to look, a lot of times if you have, I don't want to say good, but if you have some allies in faculty or if you are in a subunit, obviously they're going to direct you towards like the AFS job board. Texas A&M is super, you know, notorious for having all sorts of different positions in the natural resources. But I guess I will say that I've actually found, whether this is interesting or not, but I've found more positions than I thought I would on your quote generic unquote, listing like job sites. For example, like Indeed, I can find potentially some positions that aren't listed in other areas where you would think automatically, oh, well, this, you know, this would definitely have been on the AFS job board. Why?
I think that's a great point. I mean, this year I had more success just signing up for alerts from Google Jobs than any of the sites that I used to search a lot. So, you know, Fisheries Jobs Arkansas, and then you can just like set alerts, and then they can be daily or weekly or what have you. And then it just keeps you apprised of like stuff as soon as it comes in.
Oh, wow.
So I switched over to that this year, and I feel like I caught a lot more things right away. Julie, did you have anything that you...
I've used Indeed. I've used Conservation Job Board, Texas A&M. Job board, AFS job board. Honestly, a number of them have actually come through my university listserv, LinkedIn as well. I've looked through Twitter, actually. Science Twitter is not intimidating. It's really fun and nice. And a lot of times people will advertise their, you know, jobs there, faculty jobs or postdoc jobs or even sometimes agency jobs. The Women of Fisheries Facebook group.
Nick, did you have any resources to add? Is that where, did we hit where you guys are posting your jobs?
Yeah, for the most part. When I was searching, I would just stick with the traditional AFS website, the Texas A&M job board. And like Brett said, Indeed.com was where I saw a lot of them. We had an opening in Kansas a year or so ago that went out, and it actually wasn't put on the AFS job board because I guess the state of Kansas wasn't up to date on dues to AFS, so it wasn't able to be posted on their job board or something along those lines. Mm. So, I mean, if you're interested in looking at a certain state, look at their website. Most state agencies list their jobs right on their website that they have available. So if you're interested in a certain state, check that out.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We wish you all the best of luck in this interesting job search time. Hopefully our ramblings can help some of you. And if you have more questions or need any further advice, don't be afraid to reach out to any of us via email or social media. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget to head on over to our Patreon page and support the podcast if you feel inclined. Thank you for listening to this 71st episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember,
go get a job. Nick, do you have any witty ideas for what they should remember?
Pick up your trash.
Pick up your trash and get a job.
Pick up your trash and get a job.